Chapter 16. And bursting into tears. At the same time her miserable bonnet falling off, her hair came tumbling down about her face. Moving to speechless admiration and commiseration, young Walter, nephew of Solomon Gills, ship's instrument maker in general. Mr. Clark stood wrapped in amazement. Observing under his breath, I never saw such a start on this wharf before. Walter picked up the shoe, and put it on the little foot as the prince in the story might have fitted Cinderella's slipper on. He hung the rabbit skin over his left arm, gave the right to Florence, and felt, not to say like Richard Whittington, that is a tame comparison, but like St. George of England, with the dragon lying dead before him. Don't cry, Miss Domney, apostrophe said Walter, in a transport of enthusiasm. What a wonderful thing for me, that I am here. You are as safe now, as if you were guarded by a whole boat's crew of picked men from a man of war. Oh, don't cry. Apostrophe, I won't cry any more, apostrophe said Florence. I am only crying for joy. Apostrophe, crying for joy. Apostrophe, thought Walter, and I'm the cause of it. Come along, Miss Domney. There's the other shoe off now. Take mine, Miss Domney. Apostrophe, no, apostrophe said Florence, checking him in the act of impetuously pulling off his own. These do better. These do very well. Apostrophe, why, to be sure, apostrophe said Walter, glancing at her foot, mine are a mile too large. What am I thinking about? You never could walk in mine. Come along, Miss Domney. Let me see the villain who will dare molest you now. Apostrophe, so Walter, looking immensely fierce, led off Florence, looking very happy, and they went arm in arm along the streets, perfectly indifferent to any astonishment that their appearance might or did excite by the way. It was growing dark and foggy, and beginning to rain too, but they cared nothing for this. Being both wholly absorbed in the late adventures of Florence, which she related with the innocent good faith and confidence of her years, while Walter listened as if, far from the mud and grease of Thames Street, they were rambling alone among the broad leaves and tall trees of some desert island in the tropics as he very likely fancied, for the time, they were. Have we far to go? Apostrophe asked Florence at last, lilting up her eyes to her companion's face. Ah! By the by, apostrophe said Walter, stopping, let me see, where are we? Oh! I know. But the offices are shut up now, Miss Domney. There's nobody there. Mr. Domney has gone home long ago. I suppose we must go home too, or stay. Suppose I take you to my uncle's, where I live, it's very near here, and go to your house in a coach, to tell them you are safe, and bring you back some clothes. Won't that be best? Apostrophe, I think so, apostrophe answered Florence. Don't you? What do you think? Apostrophe, as they stood deliberating in the street, a man passed them, who glanced quickly at Walter as he went by, as if he recognized him. But seeming to correct that first impression, he passed on without stopping. Why, I think it's Mr. Carker, apostrophe said Walter. Carker in our house. Not Carker our manager, Miss Domney the other Carker, the junior Halloa. Mr. Carker, apostrophe, is that Walter Gay? Apostrophe said the other, stopping and returning. I couldn't believe it, with such a strange companion. As he stood near a lamp, listening with surprise to Walter's hurried explanation, he presented a remarkable contrast to the two youthful figures arm in arm before him. He was not old, but his hair was white, his body was bent, or bowed as if by the weight of some great trouble, and there were deep lines in his worn and melancholy face. The fire of his eyes, the expression of his features, the very voice in which he spoke, were all subdued and quenched, as if the spirit within him lay in ashes. He was respectably, though very plainly dressed, in black, but his clothes, molded to the general character of his figure, seemed to shrink and abase themselves upon him, and to join in the sorrowful solicitation which the whole man from head to foot expressed, to be left unnoticed and alone in his humility. And yet his interest in youth and hopefulness was not extinguished with the other embers of his soul, for he watched the boy's earnest countenance as he spoke with unusual sympathy, though with an inexplicable show of trouble and compassion, which escaped into his looks, however hard he strove to hold it prisoner. When Walter, in conclusion, put to him the question he had put to Florence, he still stood glancing at him with the same expression, as if he had read some fate upon his face, mournfully at variance with its present brightness. "What do you advise, Mr. Carker?" said Walter, smiling. "You always give me good advice, you know, when you do speak to me. That's not often, though." "I think your own idea is the best," he answered, looking from Florence to Walter, and back again. "Mr. Carker," said Walter, brightening with a generous thought, "come. Here's a chance for you. Go you to Mr. Dombey's, and be the messenger of good news. It may do you some good, sir. I'll remain at home. You shall go." Returned the other. "Yes. Why not, Mr. Carker?" Said the boy. He merely shook him by the hand in answer. He seemed in a manner ashamed, and afraid even to do that, and bidding him good night, and advising him to make haste, turned away. "Come, Miss Dombey," said Walter, looking after him as they turned away also, "we'll go to my uncle's as quick as we can. Did you ever hear Mr. Dombey speak of Mr. Carker the Junior, Miss Florence?" Returned the child, mildly, "I don't often hear Papa speak." "Ah. True. More shame for him," thought Walter. After a minute's pause, during which he had been looking down upon the gentle, patient little face moving on at his side, he said, "The strangest man, Mr. Carker the Junior, is, Miss Florence, that ever you heard of. If you could understand what an extraordinary interest he takes in me, and yet how he shuns me and avoids me, and what a low place he holds in our office, and how he is never advanced, and never complains, though year after year he sees young men passed over his head, and though his brother, younger than he is our head manager, you would be as much puzzled about him as I am." As Florence could hardly be expected to understand much about it, Walter bestirred himself with his accustomed boyish animation and restlessness to change the subject, and one of the unfortunate shoes coming off again opportunely, proposed to carry Florence to his uncle's in his arms. Florence, though very tired, laughingly declined the proposal, lest he should let her fall. And as they were already near the wooden midshipman, and as Walter went on to cite various precedents, from shipwrecks and other moving accidents, where younger boys than he had triumphantly rescued and carried off older girls than Florence, they were still in full conversation about it, when they arrived at the instrument maker's door. "Halloa, Uncle Sol!" cried Walter, bursting into the shop, and speaking incoherently, and out of breath, from that time forth, for the rest of the evening. "Here's a wonderful adventure. Here's Mr. Dombey's daughter lost in the streets, and robbed of her clothes by an old witch of a woman found by me brought home to our parlor to rest. Look here. Good heaven!" said Uncle Sol, starting back against his favorite compass case. "It can't be." "Well, I no, nor anybody else," said Walter, anticipating the rest. "Nobody would, nobody could, you know. Here. Just help me lift the little sofa near the fire, will you, Uncle Sol? Take care of the plates, cut some dinner for her, will you, Uncle? Throw those shoes under the grate. Miss Florence, put your feet on the fender, to dry how damp they are. Here's an adventure, Uncle, eh? God bless my soul, how hot I am." Solomon Gills was quite as hot, by sympathy, and in excessive bewilderment. He patted Florence's head, pressed her to eat, pressed her to drink, rubbed the soles of her feet with his pocket handkerchief heated at the fire, followed his locomotive nephew with his eyes and ears, and had no clear perception of anything, except that he was being constantly knocked against and tumbled over by that excited young gentleman, as he darted about the room attempting to accomplish 20 things at once, and doing nothing at all. Here, wait a minute, uncle, apostrophe he continued, catching up a candle, till I run upstairs, and get another jacket on, and then I'll be off. I say, uncle, isn't this an adventure? Apostrophe, apostrophe, my dear boy, apostrophe, said Solomon, who, with his spectacles on his forehead, and the great chronometer in his pocket, was incessantly oscillating between Florence on the sofa, and his nephew in all parts of the parlor, it's the most extraordinary apostrophe, no, but do, uncle, please do, Miss Florence dinner, you know, uncle. Apostrophe, yes, 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 apostrophe, cried Solomon, cutting instantly into a leg of mutton, as if he were catering for a giant. I'll take care of her, Wally. I understand. Pretty dear. Famished, of course. You go and get ready. Lord bless me. Sir Richard Whittington, thrice Lord Mayor of London. Apostrophe, Walter was not very long in mounting to his lofty garret and descending from it, but in the meantime Florence, overcome by fatigue, had sunk into a doze before the fire. The short interval of quiet, though only a few minutes in duration, enabled Solomon Gill so far to collect his wits as to make some little arrangements for her comfort, and to darken the room, and to screen her from the blaze. Thus, when the boy returned, she was sleeping peacefully. That's capital. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he whispered, giving Solomon such a hug that it squeezed a new expression into his face. Now I'm off. I'll just take a crust of bread with me, for I'm very hungry, and don't wake her, Uncle Sol. Apostrophe, no, no, apostrophe, said Solomon. Pretty child. Apostrophe, pretty, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Walter. I never saw such a face, Uncle Sol. Now I'm off. Apostrophe, that's right, apostrophe, said Solomon, greatly relieved. I say, Uncle Sol, apostrophe, cried Walter, putting his face in at the door. Here he is again, apostrophe, said Solomon. How does she look now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, quite happy, apostrophe, said Solomon. That's famous, now I'm off. Apostrophe, I hope you are, apostrophe, said Solomon to himself. I say, Uncle Sol, apostrophe, cried Walter, reappearing at the door. Here he is again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Solomon. We met Mr. Carker the Jr. in the street, queerer than ever. He bade me goodbye, but came behind us here. There's an odd thing. For when we reached the shop door, I looked round, and saw him going quietly away, like a servant who had seen me home, or a faithful dog. How does she look now, uncle? Apostrophe, apostrophe, pretty much the same as before, Wally, apostrophe, replied Uncle Sol. That's right. Now I am off. Apostrophe, and this time he really was. And Solomon Gills, with no appetite for dinner, sat on the opposite side of the fire, watching Florence in her slumber, building a great many airy castles of the most fantastic architecture, and looking, in the dim shade, and in the close vicinity of all the instruments, like a magician disguised in a Welsh wig, and a suit of coffee color, who held the child in an enchanted sleep. In the meantime, Walter proceeded towards Mr. Dombey's house at a pace seldom achieved by a hack horse from the stand, and yet with his head out of window every 2 or 3 minutes, in impatient remonstrance with the driver. Arriving at his journey's end, he leaped out, and breathlessly announcing his errand to the servant, followed him straight into the library, where there was a great confusion of tongues, and where Mr. Dombey, his sister, and Miss Tox, Richards, and Nipper, were all congregated together. Oh, I beg your pardon, sir, apostrophe, said Walter, rushing up to him, but I'm happy to say it's all right, sir. Miss Dombey's found. apostrophe, the boy with his open face, and flowing hair, and sparkling eyes, panting with pleasure and excitement, was wonderfully opposed to Mr. Dombey, as he sat confronting him in his library chair. I told you, Louia, that she would certainly be found, apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, looking slightly over his shoulder at that lady, who wept in company with Miss Tox. Let the servants know that no further steps are necessary. This boy who brings the information is young Gay, from the office. How was my daughter found, sir? I know how she was lost. Apostrophe here he looked majestically at Richards. But how was she found? Who found her? Apostrophe, why, I believe I found Miss Dombey, sir, apostrophe said Walter modestly, at least I don't know that I can claim the merit of having exactly found her, sir, but I was the fortunate instrument of apostrophe, what do you mean, sir, apostrophe interrupted Mr. Dombey, regarding the boy's evident pride and pleasure in his share of the transaction with an instinctive dislike, by not having exactly found my daughter, and by being a fortunate instrument? Be plain and coherent, if you please. Apostrophe, it was quite out of Walter's power to be coherent, but he rendered himself as explanatory as he could, in his breathless state, and stated why he had come alone. You hear this, girl? Apostrophe said Mr. Dombey sternly to the black-eyed. Take what is necessary, and return immediately with this young man to fetch Miss Florence home. Gay, you will be rewarded tomorrow. Oh, thank you, sir, apostrophe said Walter. You are very kind. I'm sure I was not thinking of any reward, sir. Apostrophe, you are a boy, apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, suddenly and almost fiercely. And what you think of, or affect to think of, is of little consequence. You have done well, sir. Don't undo it. Louia, please to give the lad some wine. Apostrophe, Mr. Dombey's glance followed Walter Gay with sharp disfavor, as he left the room under the pilotage of Mrs. Chick, and it may be that his mind's eye followed him with no greater relish, as he rode back to his uncle's with Miss Susan Nipper. There they found that Florence, much refreshed by sleep, had dined, and greatly improved the acquaintance of Solomon Gills, with whom she... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.